Welcome to this special edition of Political Rewind. It is election day in Georgia and across the South. I think probably the most exciting holiday of the year is election day if you're a political junkie. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting, and we are sending our show out across the state of Georgia on the GPB radio network. And today, we're really excited to welcome, for the first time, listeners at 91.7 WUGA in Athens. We're happy to have you on board. This is a great day to be joining Political Rewind. A little bit different show today. We're going to have reports from the field at polling places. We're going to talk to Secretary of State Kemp. We're going to hear from voters across the state because this is a very big day in the state of Georgia. With me in the studio, Dr. Andra Gillespie. She's an associate professor of political science at Emory University and a frequent member of our panel. Thanks for being here, Andra.
Thanks.
Todd Rehm, he is a Republican political consultant, as many of you know. He also is the editor of the daily blog GeorgiaPundit.com. Todd, let me take a moment to ask, why do people put an N at the end of the word pundit so often?
A what at the end?
They put an N. They say pundit.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea.
All right. And Bradley George, who is a host of Morning Edition here in Atlanta. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
Bradley, it's a real pleasure to have you here. All right. Real quickly, let's set the stage. Today in Georgia, there are 76 Republican delegates at stake for the Republican candidates for president. They will be proportioned, and we'll talk about that as the show goes on. And there are 102 Democratic delegates at stake. So Georgia is the second biggest cache of Republican delegates, and so it's become a very important state in the contest today. Before we have a conversation, we have Brian Kemp, Georgia Secretary of State, on the phone. Mr. Kemp, are you with us?
I am. How you doing, Bill?
We're fine here. First of all, we should congratulate you. You started talking up and sort of created that this SEC primary yourself early last year. Many of us thought that it would never happen. You are here. It's March 1st. You've got states across the South voting. And so I think it's fair to say it's been a successful effort.
I'm certainly excited to see the turnout we had in early voting. I think that's because of the excitement of the SEC primary, and that's really what I was after all along, is to have our folks voting when the race really mattered.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Kemp. We had something in the neighborhood of 405,000 Georgians voting early this year, so you already had a record number of early voters. What are you seeing at the polls today as your people go around the state? Is there a big, big turnout at many polling places?
Well, I'm at the election center up here at Kennesaw State right now, and I was asking them that same question. I think turnout has been steady today. They're predicting here that we'll have low to mid-30s. I was hoping for over 40%, so really hard to tell. It seems like we had a lot of people early vote, so that could actually work against you on election day. But also think with the enthusiasm that's out there, maybe we'll get surprised and get over 40%. But we'll have to see. It's a great day, and our things have gone very smooth, and we're looking forward to bringing the results in tonight and seeing what happened.
You had, I think, a ratio of about 60% of voters early voting asking for Republican ballots compared to about 40% Democratic. Is that correct?
I think that's pretty close to being right, and I think that makes a lot of sense with the way the race is right now. If I had to guess, I just think my feel from knowing the state, like I do, that there's a little more excitement and enthusiasm on the Republican side, more so on the Democratic side. That's not to say that people aren't excited about their candidate. I just think overall there's a little more excitement turnout-wise on the Republican side.
And at polls around the state today, are you seeing anything that suggests similar kind of excitement on the Republican side? Are there more Republican machines set up in many places? Have you had any calls for additional machines program for Republican candidates? How's that happening?
No, I haven't really, you know, I haven't really heard anything like that. I mean, we've got the option for any Georgian to go in and pick whichever ballot that they want to. So it's not necessarily, you know, having to print more Republican ballots.
Right.
Democrat,
right.
But I'm not seeing anything. I think the counties, they have a good feel for how their voters are going to vote in these type things. They look back historically just like we do, and I feel like they're prepared. So everything seems to be going very smooth today, which is exciting, and you know, we're looking forward to tonight.
Any significant problems? Andre Gillespie a few minutes ago said to us that there was a report that a DeKalb County polling place was moved at the last minute. There were people who showed up to vote at their usual place and it had been moved. Are you aware of any that situation or other similar situations?
Well, I know we had that situation in Rockdale County. There was a school that the norovirus was rampant in, and health officials were concerned about having a polling location there. Obviously, we don't want a lot of voters going into, you know, a precinct where there's a bad virus going around. So the election official did the right thing. They got a Superior Court judge to grant them being able to move their precinct. They're actually moved that precinct to the county elections office where they do early voting. I actually visited there this morning on the way in, and things are going very smooth, and they're doing all that they can to notify the voters that do show up at that precinct where they can go vote.
So we know that you are the state's top election official, and we've been talking to you, obviously, in that role, but you're also a Georgia Republican elected official. How are you reacting to something we'll talk about in a little while, which is suddenly a number of establishment Republicans, including Speaker Paul Ryan, are beginning to speak out much more loudly than they have before about Donald Trump? How do you feel about the way in which Trump seems to have divided your party?
Well, I feel good about the process that we have going on in Georgia right now. That's the way this thing called elections works. People have their right to weigh in. I think Georgians are very excited about doing that. We've got people all over the map. I mean, we've got elected officials in Georgia supporting Trump. They're supporting Rubio. They're supporting Kasich, Cruz, Carson, you know, on down the line. So I'm not too worried about that. I'll let the folks at the national level deal with that. I know from my own perspective, I've been really trying to promote the SEC primary, having Georgia and the South be a part of this election like we never have been before. That's where my focus is, and I'll be supporting the nominee when we have one.
Secretary Kemp, this is Todd Ream. Have you talked to any of your colleagues, the other secretaries of state, who are participating in the SEC primary, and have they seen the kind of traffic we have, candidates coming and going to their states, and are they getting kind of the results they wanted?
Yeah, Todd, I have. I had an email this morning from the, I think it was the elections director out in Arkansas. They have like doubled their turnout from their last presidential preference primary. And his note in that email was, we are holding up our part of the bargain on the SEC primary. So they're seeing very good turnout. I know I also saw a news report the other day where there was a mayor in small town Arkansas that was talking that they just couldn't believe that they had two presidential candidates come through their town in Arkansas and were wondering why that was happening. You know, I've heard the same thing from John Merrill, the Secretary of State in Alabama. I mean, Trump had a huge event there the other night. I know he had told me at one point that they had had eight different candidates there that he had personally met that were in the state. And I know we've seen a lot of the news reports about the number of candidates that's been going through and barnstorming in Tennessee, much like it's been in Georgia here the last week or 10 days.
Secretary Kemp, we're going to cut you loose because I know you've got a lot to do, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't at least try to put you on the spot just a little bit as a Republican elected official. You talked about you know, being able to unite behind the nominee. If the nominee is Donald Trump, are you prepared to see the party pull behind him?
Well, I'll say again, I'm going to support the nominee. I think we, you know, all Republicans are very concerned about winning the White House back, and I'm looking forward to that as the process moves forward. And I'll be following probably the the individual candidates and campaigns a little more closely after 7 p.m. tonight when I finish doing my job as Secretary of State of Georgia.
Secretary Kemp, again, congratulations. You've made the SEC primary very exciting for voters across the South here in Georgia and certainly among all of us who are paying close attention to it. I hope the rest of the day goes well at the polling places.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Let's turn right now and then bring in the panel once we've heard from him. GPB reporter Sam Whitehead, he's been out at the Grady High School polling place. Grady High School, for those of you who are outside of Atlanta, is an in-town school with a very diverse population of African-American, white students, and any number of Hispanic and Asian students as well. Sam, what are you seeing over there at Grady this afternoon?
Hey, Bill. I have been here at Grady for about an hour now, and it's been, I would say, slow but steady. People have been trickling in to vote at no point in time has there been a line of more than about 10 people, so not all that busy right now.
Bradley?
Hey, Sam. It's Bradley George here. I just wanted to throw in our colleague Trevor Young was up there at Grady this morning when polls opened, and he said that there was about 100 people waiting for them to open the doors at 7 o'clock, and he talked to an elections officer there and said that it was the biggest turnout that that person had seen for a presidential primary in some time.
Sam, were you able to find out from the poll workers there how many people have cast ballots at this point at in the afternoon?
Well, he said it was hard to pin down a number at this point. The best estimate he could give me was around 700 people, so definitely under 1,000. And just to Bradley's point, the election official I spoke with did confirm that this morning there was a line not only out the door, but around halfway around the gym. He says it's not too uncommon for afternoons to be slow periods and that he actually expects turnout to pick up as the day goes on and people get off work and actually have a chance to come out and vote.
So, Sam, let's read some tea leaves here. Are you seeing more people or the poll workers seeing more people ask for Democratic or Republican ballots at Grady?
The election official I spoke with actually could not give me any details on that. He didn't have a breakdown of Republicans or Democrats, but I can say that the people that I have spoke to have been overwhelmingly Democratic, whether or not voting for Sanders or Clinton. Actually, everyone I've spoken with here today told me they cast a Democratic ballot.
And what's the mood? Are people excited as they come in? There's, you know, this is one of those elections that sometimes when people finally get to vote, they've seen so much. There's a certain excitement they bring with them to the polls. Are you sensing that there?
I don't know if I would say excitement. The emotion that I've gotten from people is maybe a sense of urgency. Like I said, I haven't spoken with anyone who cast any Republican ballots, but a number of the Democrats I spoke with said they were motivated to come out and vote by what they'd seen in the Republican Party, specifically the rhetoric that's come out of a number of the candidates and naming Donald Trump specifically. So again, not necessarily excitement, but doing a sense of duty to make sure that their voice counted.
All right. That's Sam Whitehead reporting from the polling place at Grady High School in town, Atlanta. Andre Gillespie, if it's true that they've had maybe 700 voters at that precinct as of, say, 2 o'clock this afternoon, that suggests that that's not a big, big number of people turning out. Now, of course, after work, we could see a lot more. But you know, you've seen past presidential elections here when we have people standing in line for half an hour, 45 minutes.
Well, I mean, it's an apples to oranges comparison. And so turnout's definitely going to be lower in a primary election than it would be in any type of general election, whether it was a presidential election year or a midterm election year or even just a statewide election year. So, you know, so that in and of itself is not surprising. So, you know, 700 for what for many people is the type of election that you only participate in if you're paying a lot of attention is probably not a bad thing at all, especially when we consider that they've had record early voting turnout of over 400,000 people sort of before this race has happened. So I'm not surprised by that at all.
Todd, let me, you know, there was a time, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong. There was a time when we were all excited about the fact that we thought Georgia was going to be a crucial state in the primary season on both the Republican and Democratic sides. And certainly because we're voting on March 1st, just that early date makes it important. But Do you think I'm right when I say we're being eclipsed by, we know that Donald Trump is almost at 40% in the latest polling of the state, and he seems to be a clear winner. So is it true that Texas is going to be the place that Republicans really look to see what's going to happen, because it's there that Ted Cruz either makes or breaks his candidacy?
I've had this conversation with several people over the last couple of days, and what I've consistently said is that anybody claiming a path to the nomination or a path to being here a month from now even has to cross the threshold of winning at least one state. Pick a state, any state, doesn't matter. I think Ted Cruz has his test coming today in Texas. I think Marco Rubio has his test coming in Florida in 2 weeks. And it shows how dramatically Donald Trump has changed. We're not talking about a few delegates here and a few delegates there. We're talking about the other major candidates of the party having to prove they can even stay in beyond today or beyond 2 weeks from now.
Bradley, on the Democratic side, mm-hmm. For a while, we all watched very closely as Bernie Sanders seemed to be challenging Hillary Clinton very closely in the earliest voting states. South Carolina seemed to show that she was a dominant figure in Southern elections, and we don't see any reason to think that won't be the case here in Georgia. She's at nearly 50% in the latest polling that WSB-TV did.
Yeah, and I think there are places maybe like Grady High School precincts like that in-town Atlanta, DeKalb County, where Sanders might do quite well. It's also a place where you see, driving through neighborhoods, you see a lot of Bernie Sanders signs in front yards of homes and whatnot. Now, what's interesting about Bernie Sanders is he could win Oklahoma. Would you think? You think of all of the states on the ballot today, Oklahoma wouldn't be the case. But the latest polling there has him up by 5 points over Hillary Clinton. Profiles that I've looked at of the Democratic electorate in Oklahoma, it's wider, it's older, and that's the profile that's benefited Sanders in New Hampshire and other states where he's done well.
Andres, so if in fact on the Republican side it's Texas that people will really be watching tonight in terms of Ted Cruz's fate, in some ways, if Hillary Clinton's the clear winner here in Georgia, we kind of know that going in. Will it be Oklahoma, Minnesota, Massachusetts that we'll pay the most attention to? Because those are states that Bernie Sanders and his people really think they can challenge Hillary Clinton, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we look at where Bernie Sanders has been for most of the last week, it has not been in the South. So I think at this point his campaign realizes that that's a lost cause down here. So he has been focusing on northern and western states and midwestern states in this contest. So we'll see how well he does. Now, the thing I will say in Georgia's defense is Hillary Clinton beat him, by a more than 60-point margin in South Carolina among African Americans. But there was generational variation, and there was low voter turnout amongst the group that was more likely to vote for him, though not by a majority. So I am still very curious tonight to see, one, what turnout among young African Americans looks like, and I want to see what that vote spread
here
looks like
Georgia.
As well. Here in Georgia as well, because it's presumably potential. There's the presumed potential for there to be a younger African-American population. So the margin might not be as wide, even though I still say that Clinton takes this in a walk.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that his last visit to Atlanta, he didn't go to a number of different locations to rally his possible voters. He went right to Morehouse College and tried to engage young African-American students there. So you're right. It'll be fascinating to see what happens.
And I've been tweaking our friend Theron Johnson about this for several weeks, that if you're Hillary Clinton's campaign, you almost want, if you have to go through a primary, you almost want some resistance, because that allows you to exercise your campaign structure and to build enthusiasm. And when President Clinton comes to Atlanta and gets fewer people than John Kasich does, that suggests to me that there's an enthusiasm gap for Democratic primary voters. They certainly came in much lower than I would have thought in the early voting, with about half the numbers that the Republican primary voters.
All right, let's do this. Dr. Charles Bullock, professor of political science at the University of Georgia, one of the real veteran political observers in this state. He's been around a long, long time. And that's okay, Charles. I have too, so I'm not accusing you of being too old. Thanks for being with us, Charles.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Let me just say while we talk to you that we would love to have you tweet us. Our handle is now PoliticsGPB. PoliticsGPB. Who did you vote for today? Why did you choose that candidate? If you're a Republican, are you ready to jump in with Donald Trump? And if not, why not? Tweet us at PoliticsGPB or comment on anything else we're talking about. Charles, what are you seeing out there in Athens today? Have you been at a polling place? Did you vote today or were you an early voter?
No, I will vote this afternoon. I always like to go in later on in the day and just see what the number of people who've turned out are. So I'm not an early one. I'm a later one.
So what are you hearing as you, I mean, obviously you're paying attention to a race across the country and across Georgia. But what are your neighbors, what are people saying out there in Athens about this election?
Well, we have a microcosm, which you'd find in Atlanta. I actually live in Oconee County, which is a very Republican county. And then Clark County, which is where the university is, and you know, some students here. I went to lunch today. I went by a group of students who were up on right by the arch and were passing out Bernie Sanders materials. So I think, you know, some of the students here would be Sanders supporters. The older voters in Clark County, again, Democratic, would be much more Hillary voters.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And in terms of kind of out in Oconee County, you certainly have a number of Trump supporters. You know, Rubio, though, I think is making a move, and it seems to me he's making a move primarily among the political activists and office holders within this state. And so I polled our county commission. I guess probably a number of them would be supporters of Rubio.
Charles, having watched this state over the years that you've been here, vote quite often for what we would call mainstream establishment Republican candidates when they vote Republican. What do you make of the fact that Georgia appears poised to give Donald Trump perhaps 40-50% of the vote today?
Yeah. Well, again, this may be part of a broader change. You know, think about two of the new individuals who we sent to Congress 2 years ago, two of the Republicans. Very, very conservative. They were debating whether or not they would even vote for John Boehner for Speaker. So it is them responding to the same kind of constituency that will go out and vote for Donald Trump today.
Andra, is the Trump candidacy as of today? We saw Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, get up this morning, give a news conference, and in a very strong way repudiate Trump on this whole issue of whether Trump refused to reject the Ku Klux Klan and David Duke this week. And we've now had a couple members, Republican members of Congress, follow his lead. Is there a revolt against Trump beginning to take shape in the establishment wing of the party?
Well, I wouldn't say it's beginning to take shape. I think the Republican Party has been searching for Donald Trump's Achilles heel, and I'm not quite sure that we've found it yet. I think everything that people have attempted to use to try to undermine Trump's candidacy, to try to undermine his credibility, has seemed to not work, and they're still looking for the right message. And so one of the interesting things about today, particularly with respect to Marco Rubio, is does he gain traction enough to either cut into Donald Trump's vote or distinguish himself enough from Ted Cruz? Because that's a big problem, is that you've got these two who basically are running at par with each other, so neither of them has an incentive to drop out of the race at this point, unless somebody breaks ahead tonight. And by breaking ahead, I mean just being the clear second place choice, as opposed to, you know, us having to wait until the overnight numbers come in to know who was in second and who was in third.
Bradley, the polling by WSB TV shows Marco Rubio in second place with breaking 20% in their polling, which is significant because it and in terms of delegates, it means that once you break the 20% threshold, you get a certain share of the statewide
right,
Republican delegates. And Ted Cruz at hovering around 15-16%.
Yeah, the Cruz thing is interesting because, you know, I did this story that looked at his ground game, and he's invested a lot in grassroots volunteers and micro-targeting voters that he thinks are going to support him. But then along comes Marco Rubio, who kind of fills up the so-called establishment lane. Trump's doing really well with these evangelical voters that Cruz thinks that he's going to get. Now Cruz is in second place or third place.
What I'd be interested to see, and I should call the guy who did the poll when I get home, and I probably will.
Yeah, Roundtree is the pollster.
What I'd be interested to see is the geographic distribution, because I think that one of the things that Cruz has done is he's spent a lot more time south of I-20. And there are a number of delegates that you can pick up, even if you don't hit the statewide 20% by winning, say, the first congressional district, mm-hmm. where Cruz has been endorsed by Jack Kingston, who just swept South Georgia, even against David Perdue in 2014.
Charles, what are you seeing out your way in terms of that grassroots organization that Ted Cruz has spoken about and claimed was going to really propel him a long way here in Georgia?
Yeah, you don't see a whole lot of things that are visible now. I was up in the mountains over the weekend, and there I was seeing Ted Cruz signs up there. And that 9th Congressional District is a very conservative district with a lot of evangelicals, so he might also do quite well there. Rubio, I know, has been concentrating on kind of the Metro Atlanta districts, those heavily Democratic districts, where there won't be a whole lot of Republican voters, but they still get the same three delegates that the heavily Republican districts get, too. So Rubio and Cruz may be concentrating on different parts of the state, each hoping to pick up delegates at the district level.
I want to share with our listeners a tweet we got from Kevin at KRP Fan. He says, voted in Fulton County about an hour ago. No lines. It took less than 5 minutes. Don't know if that's good or bad. Of course, it's the middle of the afternoon. What we really are going to look for now, right, Andre, is what happens after 5 o'clock.
Right, and how long the lines are, and then sort of add that with those who were part of the morning rush. You know, hopefully Georgia doesn't have anything to sneeze at by the end of the day. I think, you know, we just have to temper our expectations and understand that while we've all cared about this race and we've watched it intently, that the vast majority of Americans have not been paying attention to this race, and they're not going to pay attention
really?
Until the end
with
of summer.
All of the cable news excitement about this election, it's just us political junkies who are paying attention.
For the most part, okay. Yeah. I mean, if you sort of think about sort of how political scientists have thought about this, most people start to pay attention after Labor Day to these kinds of things. Now, granted, I think more people are paying attention this time around because of the fact that Donald Trump has been in the race and has garnered so much attention. But one of the things that kind of struck me about Bernie Sanders' rally at Morehouse was the number of Morehouse students who were going around and doing what they normally did on a Tuesday night.
Ignoring Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, we were walking against the tide of kids going to the gym, going to the library, going to the dining hall, going back to their dormitories. And so I think for a lot of people, politics is not as salient as perhaps we would like for it to be.
Charles, before we let you go, I want to get your take on one other question here, please. There's a growing sense, it happened in South Carolina, and so we're all paying attention to it, that, and we've alluded to it this afternoon, that Republican voters may be more energized and excited, at least now in going to the polls, than Democrats are, even with Bernie Sanders, who's generated a good amount of excitement. Do you think that's going to be a long-term problem for Democrats, or does that all change once we get to a general election race? Is there going to be an enthusiasm gap, or do we have to wait to see who the candidates are?
I suspect Democrats are going to find it a lot easier to rally behind, whether it be Clinton, which it probably will be, or Sanders. I think there may be a real difficult time getting Republicans to get in line behind. Certainly, if it's Donald Trump, and as we've already talked about on the show, increasing numbers of Republican establishment folks are coming forward and criticizing him. And these are people, I think, who were standing on the sidelines thinking that Trump would just collapse on his own. And now it's become clear that's not the case. They are beginning to step forward and voice their criticisms. Of course, it may be too late, but it's going to be hard for them to get behind the person who was, say, not willing to disavow the Ku Klux Klan and some of the other things Trump has said. So, you know, Republicans may be looking at something like almost a replay from back in 1912, and you may recall that didn't work out so well for them either when there was a major split.
The Teddy Roosevelt
deal. Right, the Bull Moose movement. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I've actually been thinking about and trying to bone up on my history of 1860 all over again. So, I mean, yeah. So
tell us why 1860.
Where it's very clear that the Whig Party is gone.
Okay, right. Replaced by the Republican Party.
Yeah, no. And so, I mean, I think these are things that we are going to be thinking about in the academy for, you know, the next couple of years as a result of it. But I think you know, and let me be the first to say this here, there is such a thing as selective non-participation. and so if people are dissatisfied with their candidate, they do have the option of teaching their party a lesson by refusing to show up to vote for that candidate.
All right, we have to get a couple breaks in. Bradley George, Todd Rehm, Andre Gillespie are with us. Charles Bullock, thank you so much for joining us from University of Georgia. It's been great to have you here. By the way, Faye Montgomery just tweeted at PoliticsGPB, Bernie signs definitely outnumber Hillary signs in Savannah. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to listen to what voters are telling our GPB reporters across the state.
Astronaut Scott Kelly is about to return from a year aboard the International Space Station.
I think the, you know, the hardest part is being isolated, you know, in a physical sense from people on the ground that are important to you.
His year in space and Super Tuesday reports from across the country later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 until 7 on GPB.
Welcome back to our special election edition of Political Rewind. We're usually on the air Wednesday afternoons at 2 and Friday afternoons at 3, but this is such an important day we wanted to get on the air and share with you what's happening as we see it around the state. It's 2:36 in the afternoon. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you want to join our conversation today with me. GPB's Atlanta Morning Edition host Bradley George, Republican Todd Rehm, and Emory University Political Science Associate Professor Dr. Andre Gillespie. Let's do this if we can, everybody. We had some of our GPB folks out at polling places in Savannah, Macon, here in Atlanta, and they asked voters what issues were driving them to the polls today, and then who they voted for and why. And producer Jenny Ament assembled all this, and here's her report.
What is important to you this election season?
What's most important to you in this election?
That people come out and are well represented.
Safety and security for the next 4 years and beyond are very important to me.
Healthcare, national security.
Somebody that's real.
I am interested in decreasing the negative rhetoric and the...
I think economic inequality is as bad as ever.
Police brutality.
Education, healthcare.
Immigration.
Getting Wall Street out of our government.
LGBT community concerns and the economy.
Taking care of things that the military needs to take care of, and I just really believe in protecting ourselves, and like, that's all I got to say.
What issues? Oh my God, so many.
Getting big money out of politics.
Equal pay for equal rights.
And mass incarceration.
Being respected on the world stage by other world leaders.
I'm more in domestic policy than foreign policy.
For a number of reasons. I think, though, off the bat, one of the important things for me as a parent is parental leave. In the United States and the policies that we have for families when they have children.
This is my first time as a Georgia voter, so the primary is important.
healthcare is probably my biggest one.
That we continue on the level that we're going on, the path we're on right now.
I think income inequality is something that really affects all of us, I think it affects the rich as well.
Helping people locally and nationally.
Education.
The economy, yeah.
Being for the people. Being for all people.
The economy is a big piece. I'm glad that we've got health care. I think there's definitely some improvements that need to happen with it.
Those are big ones for me.
You mind telling me who you voted for?
Hillary Clinton.
We have new ideas with Bernie Sanders.
I voted for Bernie Sanders.
I voted for Bernie Sanders.
Hillary.
Marco Rubio.
Hillary Clinton.
Bernie Sanders.
I think that he cares a lot more about the people of the United States than anyone else does.
I think he's going to be better than Donald Trump.
I think she's the most qualified candidate for the job.
Ben Carson. I just really believe in what he stands for, and I think he can make a change for us.
I vote for Hillary.
Hillary.
Bernie Sanders.
Hillary Clinton.
Because
I think he states where we need to go.
The economy is important to me, but honestly, this is a very disappointing presidential race.
I voted for Marco Rubio.
I mean, I was going to vote in the Republican primary just so that it wasn't Trump. But at the same time, I might as well vote for the candidate that I want to vote for. So
I voted for Bernie Sanders to send a message.
I just can't have Trump as president, so that's my opinion. So.
Wow, all right. Well, this is controversial. I did vote for Hillary this morning.
Hillary?
Why?
Well, I feel like she's no more crooked than any other politician, and I'm all for a woman in the White House.
All right. Jenny Ahmed put that sound piece together. We should thank Daryl Welch, our booking producer, who was out with Jenny talking to voters. In Macon, our Macon Bureau, Leah Fleming, and our Savannah Bureau, Emily Jones, we thank them all for contributing to this. Bradley, a couple of things that are interesting there. Number one, it's interesting with all the issues that came up. Immigration, which Donald Trump certainly talked about over and over and over again, didn't rise to the level of real, genuine concern among those people.
Yeah, I will say that we didn't hear from any Trump voters in that.
That's absolutely
montage,
right.
But that is what it is. Yeah, I mean, it's usually the bread and butter issues. It's the economy and people's livelihoods. That's usually when you talk to folks, when I've talked to folks, when I've done those interviews with voters, that's usually the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, Todd, I think we do want to make sure we say this was a montage of voices that our people got in a relatively brief period of time.
Inside the perimeter?
No, well, the Atlanta,
some from
the
Macon
Atlanta
and Savannah
was,
too.
But Macon okay. and Savannah. But the point is, clearly, we expect Donald Trump to have a huge victory today, notwithstanding the fact that our folks just didn't identify any Trump voters who were willing to talk. And as you know, a lot of people don't want to talk when a reporter comes up with a microphone.
I don't know. I haven't met a Trump supporter yet who doesn't want to tell you about it. They're like vegans wanting to tell you all about what they're doing.
What did you make of what you heard, Andra?
So as I was going through the montage, I was actually writing down what party I thought these people were from. Because one of the interesting things that comes out of the exit polls are just the differences in terms of issue salience for Democrats and Republicans. So Democrats are caring about issues like income inequality, unemployment, healthcare, and Republicans tend to be more concerned about the deficit and concerned about terrorism. And other types of security issues into immigration as well. And so you could hear that in their voices, like without knowing for sure who was who, it was actually pretty easy to guess who was who. And I think that probably the second thing that kind of came out of that was the notion of crossover voting. And so it's been a long time since a study has been done that I know of in political science, but the one study that I'm familiar with suggests that the notion of Democrats voting in Republican primaries and vice versa is actually relatively low. And even in an election that to me would seem a very attractive election for that type of crossover voting, there are people who still were saying, like that woman said, I might as well just vote for the candidate that I actually believe in, as opposed to voting in the other party to either vote against the one that I really don't want or to strategically vote that person in to try to create a straw man for my preferred candidate.
Yeah, it does strike me, Todd, that there's always a lot of talk before elections about in a state where you can take either ballot, we're going to turn out and vote against candidate X. And it just doesn't ever really develop, does it?
As a political consultant doing nothing else to make a living for 20 years, I have never lost a moment's sleep over the idea of people doing that.
Yeah.
And it's really just an urban legend.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you make, Bradley, you can weigh in on this too, but Todd, what did you make of the woman who said, I'd be looking for Hillary Clinton. I don't think she's any more dishonest than the rest of them.
That's somebody who certainly come to terms with her choices.
Andre.
And I think the analog is on the Donald Trump side. It doesn't matter what dirt you bring up on this guy. We've already decided that we're going to vote for him. And so therefore, we're going to go along with it. And so that just suggests this is somebody who made up their mind a very long time ago, and they're just not going to be persuaded.
You know, Bradley, let's talk about we haven't glossed over it, but we've only mentioned briefly this KKK controversy that came up this week. Donald Trump, who's endorsed by David Duke, a former high-level grand whatever they call him of the KKK, and he seemed reluctant to completely repudiate David Duke, or for that matter, the Ku Klux Klan, and clearly he's gotten a lot of significant pushback as a result of that.
He's gotten pushback, but again, Donald Trump just defies all of the conventional wisdom about American politics. We don't know yet if it's going to affect his vote in any way, if it's going to hurt him. It might, you know, if he continues in the race, and he certainly will after tonight, if we see, you know, some of these contests coming up in a couple of weeks, if it sees it hurts him there. But short of him just saying flat out, look, I don't want this endorsement. I don't want anything to do with this guy, which I think he's done before. But then there was this weird interview he did with Jake Tapper on CNN where he claimed he couldn't hear in the earpiece what he was talking about. And so this is going to keep dogging him. It's going to keep coming up until he actually does something. It's like, all right.
Well, but Todd, I would argue that two things could happen. I think it's true. This certainly came along awfully late for voters who are at the polls today to change their minds about Trump. Whether they would ever or not, we don't know. We may see whether that continues to be an issue. But I do wonder if, in fact, it's going to slow down the rush that had sort of begun with Jeff Sessions in Alabama for establishment members of the House and Senate and of the Republican Party to endorse Donald Trump. I don't think it's a coincidence that Paul Ryan this morning, let me read just a part of what he said. He said, Republicans are going to the polls in 11 states today. There's a lot at stake. This is the kind of moment where we should be having a serious debate about the politics needed to restore the American idea. Instead, the conversation over the last few days has been about white supremacist groups. I want to be very clear about something. If a person wants to be the nominee of the Republican Party, there can be no evasion and no games. They must reject any group or cause that is built on bigotry. This party does not prey on people's prejudices.
I do want to say that it is hard as a candidate or as somebody advising candidates to be held responsible for somebody else who publicly endorses you, whose support you haven't sought. And I don't think that Trump or anybody from the Trump organization sought out David Duke's endorsement. What I think is that David Duke saw an opportunity to get some free airtime, and the news media grabbed that and ran with it. David Duke hasn't realistically been relevant to anything since the 1990s, I don't think. But we've gotten so far in it's clickbait for TV guys.
I mean, and I don't disagree with you on that, but there are some things that I think critics have pointed out that the Trump campaign may need to consider. So there was the idea of Trump claiming that he couldn't hear, in his earpiece what was going on. And then there are other people who are alleging, but he said, I don't know what the KKK is. So even if you can't hear everything correctly, to say, are you asking me, do I support the KKK? Of course not. And then you try to correct that part of it later. And then the part that I had trouble believing was a man who's almost 70 years old saying he has no idea what the Ku Klux Klan is. Like, that just sort of struck me as very, very unbelievable and somewhat untenable. And I think probably from an RNC standpoint, where they've tried, and I've been very critical of some of the efforts that they've done to try to reach out to minority voters, what they're seeing is my minority outreach plan just went out the water, because all people who are seeing or paying attention are now going to hear is that the leading Republican candidate got endorsed by a former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Though I will say, on TV, on Channel 2 last night, I saw an ad for Donald Trump. It was endorsed by an African-American man whose son was killed by an undocumented immigrant.
Right. And that one's been up for a few days. And so it was very clear that he was trying to reach out to African-American voters. And that was actually up before the Jake Tapper interview. So it was very clear what he was doing there. And there were the four black guys behind him at Valdosta State.
Right. And he was introduced by a black pastor at his rally in Alabama over the weekend, too.
Let's read a couple tweets. Will Kramer tweeted to us, I proudly voted for Rubio. Trump is racist, misogynistic, and xenophobic. Rubio is optimistic and will lead us into prosperity. One Big Dog fan, I voted for Bernie for LGBT rights, women's rights, equal pay for equal work, and remove Wall Street from Pennsylvania Avenue. And Rusty Hogan said, Marco Rubio is the best choice for our country. Let's do this. Let's take another break and come back and wrap up the show. We're going to give a call to our friend Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the AJC, who's been all over the country following this race. Just get an update from him on what he's seeing out there. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Andra Gillespie, Todd Rehm, Bradley George. I'm Bill Nigut. It's 2:49 in the afternoon.
For the first time in history, single women, women who have never married, outnumber married women. On the next Fresh Air, why women are remaining single and how it's affecting their lives and gender roles in and outside of marriage. Our guest will be Rebecca Traister, author of All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women, and the Rise of an Independent Nation. Join us.
Fresh Air is today at 3 on your GPB station.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Andra Gillespie, Bradley George, and Todd Rehm are here in the studio. And our friend Greg Bluestein, who is often a panelist on the show, is with us by telephone. Greg, give us a couple of minutes on what you've been following this race from Iowa to New Hampshire to South Carolina. You've been with the candidates. What are your reflections on what you're seeing today and what you expect here in Georgia? Greg, do we have you? Well, we seem to have lost Greg Bluestein. We'll see if we can get him back in a second here. Todd, let me go back to you, because we really didn't hear your take on this as a Republican. What I think is fascinating about Trump is, and maybe this is a lesson that you will teach other candidates, as odd as it is, he has not budged in terms of doing what Andra is suggesting. He hasn't done any kind of mea culpa, really. He's moved on. He's moved on. He has not given the press that follows him, the media that follows him, a whole lot to hold on to. They can keep charging him, but he refuses to make it a big issue. And the question is, does that make it less of an issue in some way? Does that make sense, my question?
So one of the most difficult things that a political consultant has with a brand new candidate is to beat out of them the habit of answering questions that are asked of them. And what Dr. Gillespie mentioned about his sort of failure to address some of the KKK questions is one of the few times we've seen him taken aback because he actually appeared to listen to the question, even though he claims he didn't hear it. But the ability to use the question that was asked as an opportunity to state your opinion, no matter what it is a political skill. And one of the interesting things about Trump is he's got a skill set that is more like Reagan's skill set in some ways than it is other candidates. I'm not saying he's ideologically like Reagan, but Reagan always had his one-liners on 3x5 cards, and he might carry them around for weeks until he had the opportunity to whip it out. But he did a great job of feigning spontaneity.
Yeah, you know, Andre, so let me frame what I asked a little bit, because, of course, Todd's correct. I think you were nodding. So here's the way a controversy like this might traditionally play out. Candidate is caught saying something that's inappropriate. There's a lot of flurry of concern about it. And a day later, the candidate holds a news conference, comes before the cameras, and in a very sincere way, tries to explain, yes, I made a mistake. I feel awful about what I said. This does not reflect who I am. And in an odd way, that doesn't answer the problem because the person has still said that. Well, Trump doesn't do any of that. He just keeps going.
Right.
Right? Isn't that a strange and different kind of approach? Well, I'm not saying it's good. It's just Trump.
Well, I've said this here before. I don't know if Donald Trump is an exemplar of anything. So I don't know if anybody can look at him and sort of say this is the playbook that we need to use going forward. Trump is walking a very delicate tightrope. So he is dealing with voters who want to blow Washington up, and they're drawn to him. And so they will vote for him no matter what, because they really want somebody who doesn't have D.C. experience there in that position, regardless of what he says. He has attracted people who appear to perhaps hold some views that we would argue are racially resentful. He doesn't want to alienate those groups. And then he's got people who are so tired of losing that they'll go along with this candidate who has high brand recognition, if you will, and they'll hope that this will create something new. And then there's some who believe that he has been genuinely successful in business and might be able to apply some of that business know-how to Washington, D.C. And so I think what he was trying to do was play all of his sides. I think he is well aware of the fact that he has, a motley crew of strange bedfellows, to mix metaphors, if you will, that are part of his coalition. And he wouldn't want to do anything at this point still with only, 125 or 150 delegates to stop that momentum.
Let me see if we can get Greg Bluestein in here for at least a minute. AJC, Greg, are you with us? Greg?
I'm back.
Look, we would have loved to have been able to talk to you more, but we're running out of time. Would you just give us, because you've been all over the country, give us your brief take on what you see happening in Georgia today and what you think we should expect?
Well, I think you should expect Donald Trump to start really building. You're seeing the genesis of his coalition. You're really going to see it take root, I think, tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if the election isn't called for Trump shortly after the polls close, based on what we're already seeing in the polls that we've already seen. And it's a testament that he can not only win the religious conservatives in South Carolina and Georgia and the independents in New Hampshire and the, you know, libertarians in Nevada, but he's going to have a big night all throughout. And for Clinton, Hillary Clinton, this will, she'll lock down the minority base in the South, and probably, and really prove that she has cemented that key constituency for Democrats.
It's going to be hard to see a path for Bernie Sanders after tonight if he doesn't score some victory somewhere, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, right? Everybody seems to be nodding here at the table. Do you agree, Greg?
Yeah, it's real tough. I mean, he'll still be in the hunt for delegates. And remember, he also has a huge deficit in the superdelegate fight. And unlike in 2008, when some superdelegates switched from Hillary Clinton to Obama, I don't. That's going to be a lot harder of a sell for them to switch from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders, especially after she ekes out the beginning of a solid lead. So.
All right. Well, Greg Bluestein, you know we are going to continue to read your reporting in the AJC, and I'll look forward to getting you back here in the studio to join us for Political Rewind. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes on a busy day.
Glad to do it.
Todd, let's see that. We just got a couple minutes here. We are going to watch. We all think the night's going to be called early for Clinton and for Trump on the in Georgia. So Ted Cruz, with his big army of volunteers, his hopes for the evangelical vote, what do you imagine is going to happen to him? The evangelicals may not be there for him.
I'll tell you what's going to happen to him is he's going to be partying in a time zone to the west of us in Houston. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen the last couple days in Georgia is a lot more Marco Rubio, and it's easy to read into that Rubio probably thinks he has a better chance of investing some time here. But we forget that Cruz is investing his time in a state that he might actually win.
Right.
He might pick up 100 delegates tonight over in Texas. And so I think that the rest of in a dynamic where you have to prove that you can win a state to keep going, I think that all of his chips are in the Lone Star State.
Andre, you're nodding.
I don't disagree with that, but I think Cruz has to win tonight because otherwise the path forward is probably not there for him. And I think
in Texas
for Rubio, he is still going to have a hard time still convincing people that they should continue to support him if he keeps on racking up these second place victories, if you call them that. But because his test isn't until March 15th, then I think it probably still gives him breathing room. So he's just trying to outperform expectations and hopes that people will be patient enough with him to sort of see his campaign take shape.
It's somewhat the same thing with John Kasich, who was campaigning today with Newt Gingrich in Virginia. He's holding on till Ohio.
Michigan is coming up March 8th, and then we'll have Ohio, his home state. So the race looks like it's taking shape on the Democratic side, but there's still all sorts of X factors. Although Donald Trump is increasingly, and tonight we'll find out if he really is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. Todd, real quick, you got 10 seconds to make
the most
final
important
point.
Election that I'm going to be watching tonight is the Tucker mayor and city elections, the first time they're going to have their own government.
All right. Andre Gillespie, Todd Ream, Bradley George, thank you. Jenny Amet, you want to make sure we know who those voices were.
Shelley Eckert.
Don Batiski.
Whitney Deal.
Henry Kahn.
Kristen Castle.
Amanda Penny.
Brittany Tyner.
Melanie Carter.
Jeff O'Brien.
Robbie Graham.
Amy Sturgill.
Lindsay Kostakis.
Jenny Lynn Rutter.
Nicole Gustin.
Avis Lemons.
James Yates.
Sarah Weber.
Beth Stewart.
Aaron.
Lauren McDonough.
Tanya Alston.
Megan Gaither.
Sean Colley.
Yeah, my name is Louis Ficklin.
Robert Davis.